Everybody, Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Glad you could make it. Glad you could make it. What happened today? What, 520 points down again? My goodness. Now, tomorrow it'll probably inch up a little bit, and then on Friday, boom, down again. Somebody's making a few bucks, don't you think? Oh, my God. We're going to talk about that a little bit. Matter of fact, I don't know how much I want to talk about that. That's somebody else's game, right? It's not the real world. We're going to be joined tonight in about an hour by Annie Nelson, who is going to talk to us about Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance, SBA, founded in 2006 by biodiesel pioneer Kelly King, activist Annie Nelson, and filmmaker Daryl Hannah. We're going to talk about that. You've heard me talking about it all this week. And last, just teasing it, because we'd rather have an expert on than my trying to get too far into this over my head. So Annie Nelson will join us in about an hour, and we'll talk about this. And of course, the program tonight and tomorrow and Friday, as it has been for the past 10 days, is underwritten by FarmAid 2011 and all the people who are presenting that, the musicians, the techs, the spirit behind it. This is the 26th time Willie Nelson and FarmAid are working to keep family farmers on their land for the obvious reasons. This year's concert is Saturday, August 13th in Kansas City, Kansas. You can listen to it on Sirius XM, I believe. Is that right, Kathy? Sirius XM is going to carry it live, and the website, farmaid.org, will also have it. So go to the website, if you got a minute, farmaid.org, check it all out. And then a little bit later tonight, about an hour, we'll be talking with Annie Nelson. So stick around. This hour is sponsored, excuse me, by John and Stanley Cogdill. They are brothers. John lives in Bethesda, Maryland. Stanley lives in Seattle, Washington. They are sponsoring all 3 hours tonight. The message, thank you for educating people about the harm Republicans and their financial masters have done to America over the past 30 years. Americans must stop voting against their own best interests. Thank you, John. Thank you, Stanley. Where to begin?
It's always best to begin at the beginning. Follow the yellow brick road, follow the yellow brick road. We're up to see the wizard.
I'm sorry. My daughter does that. I just got, she does a real good munchkin. Let's start with Prairie 2. The bubbly is going flat. Is the subject line. The Dow took back yesterday's run-up and another 100 points besides, closing down today 520 points. This mini-crash was driven mostly by rumors that the big banks are in trouble, especially Bank of America, which is the biggest of the big, and it has the smallest reserves for its size. It is also on the hook for $62 billion in bad mortgages it sold to investors and only has $22 billion set aside to pay for this. Banks have been making a lot of money running up the stock markets and then speculating in commodities, two streams of cash that seem to have run dry for the moment. These operations could be largely curtailed by the Dodd-Frank law, depending on whether Republicans are successful in completely gutting the regulations currently being written or not. Market bubbles have become a way of life over the past 30 years. And as the American class, the host, or the American middle class, the host for these parasites, become smaller and weaker, the cycles of boom and bust become ever shorter. The boom, of course, only works for the 0.3% at the very top. The other 99.7% of Americans function only to put money in and not take it out. Not that it's impossible to make money, but most people in the stock market, but most people buy high and sell low. The evidence is that gold topped $1,800 an ounce today and then declined a tad. The people buying think they are shrewd. No, the people selling are shrewd. Of course, the number of people who can even put money into investments gets smaller every day, while the parasites want still more, so they feed harder. That is to say, the schemes become ever more outrageous. How did any investor think that securitized subprime debt was a good investment? Oh, that's right. The ratings agency said they examined the loans and they were AAA. Agencies like S&P. Now we're told that we have to accept the collapse of Western civilization because countries that have no real economic problems are going to be unable to make good on their bonds, and they are being downgraded. The reason they won't be able to pay? Interest rates are going through the roof. And why is this? Because they've been downgraded by these same ratings agencies that gave us the last crisis. Think S&P. 10 years ago, we were told by the masters of the universe that the future of the United States was financial services and not those dirty industrial jobs. The world needed our expertise in finance. And we had something that no one else had. The U.S. dollar with a AAA credit rating to back it up. Indeed, it wasn't long before 30% of corporate profits were coming from financial services. Wall Street firms were papering the planet from one end to the other. It was all champagne and caviar. That is, if you didn't look back in the kitchen where the food inspectors had been fired. After the big crash, it wasn't fixed. The Federal Reserve just printed up $14 trillion and spread them around. The whole world complains but still pretends it's not really food poisoning, but it's getting harder to ignore the bodies. People on the inside say 80% of financial services should be made illegal. These things used to be illegal. There will be no recovery until this is done. Just bubbles of ever shorter duration until the champagne goes flat. PrairieNumeral2.com. I don't know why he doesn't put these in a book. The parasites. Robert Craig is the executive director of Citizen Action of Wisconsin, a progressive group. He said today, quote, although we are disappointed that we did not pull off upset victories in four predominantly Republican Senate districts last night, we also realize that this was only an early skirmish in a long battle to restore American freedom, and that the fate of social movements is not determined by one election. A new movement to restore economic opportunity in the middle class was born during the Wisconsin workers' rights protests, and the tens of thousands of new activists who came together to fight for economic justice on Republican turf this summer is a major step toward taking back Wisconsin and ultimately the entire country. The electoral playing field will be much more even in 2012 when Governor Walker directly faces this robust new movement in his own recall election. And Ben Mansky, executive director of the Liberty Tree Foundation and a spokesperson for this umbrella group, Wisconsin Wave. He's a lifelong Wisconsinite and public interest attorney. Mansky said today, quote, big money spoke yesterday, but big democracy spoke louder. The Republicans lost one-third of its seats, and the momentum to recall Governor Walker appears unchecked. The other important story here is that once again, Waukesha County, Wisconsin election officials have undermined public faith in the integrity of Wisconsin elections. End quote. Past the hour. Where was Obama yesterday? Where was Barack Obama yesterday? The reason I ask that question is because I'm kind of sort of asking it in a, in an ironic voice. Because Obama is not the least bit interested in progressive movements or liberalism. And the thing that unnerves me is to see now what's going on. The conversations that are floating all around media about, it's starting to be of the sort that the Republicans, have destroyed the country. Now, I don't disagree with that, but with the month-long delay in this dumbass, ridiculous, phony debt ceiling issue, the Republicans have destroyed the country, destroyed the republic, but over the past 30 years, certainly not just in the past year, the Republicans are determined. The fascists, the proto-fascists, the Republicans are determined to make this president, as Mitch McConnell said, a one-term president. That is their sole objective. They don't care what it takes. They will destroy the country. They'll destroy the planet. the fact that a black guy is president is just too much for these people to take. They cannot stand it. And secondarily, the fact that he's he's a Democrat. At least he has a D after his name. Although he doesn't stand up for any democratic principles. But where was he? Where was he last night? He had a perfect opportunity, didn't he? He had a perfect opportunity. All he had to do, he would have been in interfering in state politics. Ooh, don't do that, Mr. President. State politics, my ass. We're in a death struggle here. But the overriding argument now is starting to take shape and form and substance is, kind of like the creation of the earth, right? Is that Republicans are really responsible for all this. Setting aside the reality, now a few commentators are tossing in Republicans and Democrats. Granted, the Republicans are responsible for it, but the system, the Christo-fascism that has taken over this country, that's what's driving this. Now, it still identifies itself as the Republican Party and the Christian religion. It is Christo-fascism, purely and simply. It is hell-bent on destruction for a couple of reasons. First of all, that will speed up Jesus' return. As much chaos as these cockroaches can inject into the system, to the degree that they can inject chaos in the system, I should rephrase that, will determine how quickly their Savior returns. Oh, it's in the Bible. It's in the Holy Writ. There will be wars, rumors of wars. There will be financial catastrophe. The fascism part is just kind of, until dear Jesus comes back, we're going to make sure that we are providing for him a nice landing, a soft landing. And that means getting rid of all this stuff that the liberals would tell you he talked about when he walked the Middle East 2,000 years ago. Those are lies! Jesus wanted capital gains taxes eliminated! Jesus wanted no restrictions on Wall Street! There was no Wall Street. Yes, there was! Where? In God's mind! Oh, okay. Okay, okay. So, rather than confront the issue, all these commentators, and by the way, we're gonna show you tonight. We're gonna play for you Dylan Radigan's meltdown. Welcome aboard, Dylan. On MSNBC yesterday, it's beautiful. I love him. I love Dylan. He finally got pissed off. You notice he wasn't at work today. Ay. But word is starting to filter up that maybe, just maybe, it's the system. The Christo-fascism, i.e. casino / predatory capitalism that we're living under. Just maybe it's not the Democrats or necessarily the cockroaches who now comprise the Republican Party, but the system itself. How are you going to reform a system that is corrupt at its center? How do you do that? 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 You don't. That's the answer. You remove it. You replace it. You face up to the fact that it served its purpose. What was it? Its purpose? Its purpose was to exploit, which capitalism has done for the past almost 200 years. And it's done a damn fine job, hasn't it? My goodness sakes. But there comes a point when there's nothing left to exploit. Or as Prairie 2 said, the bubbles, the champagne has all gone flat. I mean, where else are these roaches going to feed? So the result is Christo-fascism. Unless you and I decide that we don't want that. You know what I'm saying? Before the hour, stick around. About a half an hour, we'll be joined by Annie Nelson. What, he answered already? Oh, God. All right. Prairie 2 has an answer for me. Where was Obama? Anyway, here's Prairie 2's take. While the Reich crows about their win in Wisconsin. In fact, for practical purposes, they lost. One moderate Republican has been voting with the Democrats against the anti-union and anti-education agenda. And these two new Democrats will give the same people a majority in the Senate. The Democrats do still need to defend themselves against two recalls next week, and the billionaires are spending tens of millions to defeat them. The recalls drew heavy turnouts from both sides, and while these were predominantly Republican districts, the Democrats who lost did so by smaller margins than normal. Recalls can't occur during the first year in office, so the new Republicans who took seats in predominantly Democratic districts in 2010 will be eligible to be recalled in January 2012, as will the governor. New gerrymandering will be in effect then, as Walker signed the bill quietly on Monday, which was the last day possible. Recalling the governor would be the easiest to do, as he wouldn't benefit from gerrymandering and is a and is as popular in America's Dairyland, that's Wisconsin, as hoof and mouth disease. He can't appear in public without being booed. Where was the president yesterday? Obama spent 5 hours out of Dover Air Force Base meeting each coffin individually. This is 5 hours more than George W. Bush spent there. George Herbert Walker Bush was shown split screen on CNN playing golf when the coffins came back from the Gulf War, and then band cameras from Dover Air Force Base. Okay, he was meeting coffins. I guess that is a proper thing to do when you are the inheritor of a policy of death and destruction in Afghanistan for no apparent reason, no rational reason. And then as the inheritor, you decide to double down and send more people to kill and be killed. To what end, Mr. President? We are still... Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. My bad. We are trying to defeat Al-Qaeda. Or is it the Taliban? Or is it terrorism? Or something? Well, thanks, Ferry 2. I really did not know where he was. So I appreciate your input. Jeff in Los Angeles answers the same question. Where was Obama? He was looking for his comfortable pair of shoes. Harumph. This hour is being sponsored by the brothers Cogdill, John and Stanley. John lives in Bethesda, Maryland. Stanley lives in Seattle, Washington. Their message, thank you for educating people about the harm Republicans and their financial masters have done to America over the past 30 years. Americans must stop voting against their own best interests. Amen and amen. It's Wednesday night, prayer meeting night. I don't have a whole lot. Warren Jeffs, the guy who decided he liked to have sex with lots of little girls, he's been sentenced to life in prison, I think. Boy, do you have a surprise waiting for you in prison, Mr. Jeffs. Child molesters are, how to put this delicately, frowned upon in prison. The former Petaluma, California bureau chief, Terry, who is now a patriotic expat living in Hudson, Canada, wrote to me, sent me a link to an analysis. It's an article on AMPED status, AMPED, A-M-P-E-D, status, AMPEDstatus.org, an analysis of financial terrorism in America. Referencing over a million deaths annually and 62 million people with zero net worth, as the economic elite in this country make off with $46 trillion. And just an excerpt here I want to share with you. Since the mid-1970s, worker production and wealth creation has exploded. Worker production and wealth creation, it's exploded. As the statistics throughout this report prove, the dramatic increase in wealth has been almost entirely absorbed by the economic top one-tenth of 1% of the population, with most of it going to the top one-hundredth of 1%. If you're wondering why a critical mass of people desperately struggling to make ends meet are still not fighting back with overwhelming force and running the mega-wealthy aristocrats out of town, let's consider two significant factors, okay? Here's one. People are so busy trying to maintain their current standard of living that their energies are consumed by holding on to the little that they have left. And number two, people have very little understanding of how much wealth has been consolidated within the top economic one-tenth of 1%. All right, considering the first factor, it is obvious that people have become beaten down psychologically and financially. A report in The Guardian of the UK entitled "Anxiety Keeps the Super Rich Safe from Middle Class Rage" suggests that people are so desperate to hold on to what they have that they're too busy looking down to look up. Quote, as psychologists would tell you, fear of loss is more powerful than the prospect of gain. The struggling middle classes look down more anxiously than they look up, particularly in recession and sluggish recovery, end quote. Right, consider the second factor. People do not understand how much wealth has been withheld from them. The average person has never personally experienced or seen the excessive wealth and luxury that the mega-rich live in. Wealth inequality has grown so extreme, and the wealthy have become so far removed from average society, it's as if the rich exist in some outer stratosphere beyond the comprehension of the average person. As the Guardian report mentioned above also states, quote, having little daily contact with the rich and little knowledge of how they lived, they simply didn't think about inequality much or regard the wealthy as direct competitors for resources. As the sociologist Gary Runciman observed, envy is a difficult emotion to sustain across a broad social distance, end quote. Even now, most underestimate the rewards of bankers and executives. Top pay has reached such levels that, rather like interstellar distances, what the figures mean is hard to grasp, end quote. In fact, the average American vastly underestimates the severe wealth disparity that we currently have. This survey, featured in the New York Times, reveals that Americans think our society is far more equal than it actually is. Quote, in a recent survey of Americans, the researchers found that Americans drastically underestimated the level of wealth inequality in the United States. While recent data indicate that the richest 20% of Americans own 84% of all wealth, people estimated that this group owned just 59%, believing that total wealth in this country is far more evenly divided among poorer Americans. What's more, when we asked them how they thought wealth should be distributed, they told us they wanted an even more equitable distribution, with the richest 20% owning just 32% of the wealth. This was true of Democrats and Republicans, rich and poor. All groups we surveyed approved of some inequality, but their ideal was far more equal than the current level. And yet, we continue to allow this to go on. The organized disobedience that is occurring in Israel, the anarchic chaos and violence that is occurring. Now, please don't send me an email and tell me that anarchy and violence are not. I understand that. I'm just using the term as a modifier. All right, I'll take it out. The violence that's going on in Britain is not contained and organized. And three more people died as a result of the riots. Yes, it was a hit-and-run driver. And yes, they were all three Muslims. And how is the UK responding? How is Netanyahu in Israel responding? And when are the people in this country going to say, okay, it's time to go to the streets? When? What's it going to take? Please, somebody, tell me. Anybody? Hello? Anybody out there? Hello?
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Okay. Somebody's going to tell me eventually. Somebody's going to tell me exactly what it's going to take. Of course, what it normally takes to put millions of people in the streets saying enough has already occurred.
Thank you.
before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by the brothers Cogdill, John and Stanley. John on the East Coast, Stanley on the West Coast. Thanks, guys. And matter of fact, they are sponsoring all 3 hours tonight. The message, thank you for educating people about the harm Republicans and their financial masters have done to America over the past 30 years. Americans must stop voting against their own best interests. Lord knows, John Stanley, I would love to see that happen, too. regarding that little bit I just shared with you on the researchers talking about people, their fear of loss, Michael in Roswell writes, those researchers on fear of loss might be right. After all, the rioters in England are busy burning down their own neighborhoods, and not the Bank of England or the London Stock Exchange. Yeah, isn't that the way it goes so often when you have so-called civil unrest that makes that turn from, well, I guess in some instances the turn never presents itself. It starts out as a riot. I'm only using the terms provided in the glossary of these kinds of events. I understand, I think I do, as much as I can, not being a citizen of the UK, but I think I understand why these riots are occurring. the unrest, and I hate that word, the disorder, I hate that word, the, I'm trying to find a word that encompasses everything from the mass killing that's going on in Syria. And by the way, Syria is the next country we're going to strike. That was clear the other day. I forgot to mention when Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and who's the third country? Was it Jordan? When they withdraw their ambassadors, that is giving the United States and its allies permission to begin the bombing. So I would expect over the weekend that the bombing of Aleppo and some of the other cities in Syria will begin. Just guessing. But the United States was holding off until given permission by the Saudis to start the attack on Syria. Just guessing. But the civil unrest that has occurred across the Middle East, Africa, into Europe is in reaction, I think, in every single case, in some more extreme than others, of course, in these countries dominated by Arab dictators that the United States and Europe has supported for years and years and years because it, you know, kept the peace and at least guaranteed since 1972 that there would be no open warfare between the Israelis and the Arabs. So those dictatorships that the United States supported, the rebellion was against, obviously, you know, people who finally said we've had enough. You know, the religious pressure, the government pressure, the fact that we can't breathe, we can't move, we can't do anything. And to a lesser extent, the attitude of the capitalists in the UK and Israel, this merciless attitude of more so in Europe than in Israel. Because Israel has started out as a purely socialist state, whereas the UK was not purely socialist, obviously. But the resistance is what I'm trying to get to, the resistance, the civil disobedience, the unrest, the rioting, the massive protests in Israel, the occupation of Tahrir Square, the however this is manifested, this resistance, it has been against conservative or right-wing governments or dictators. And you don't find a liberal dictator. I mean, it's a contradiction in terms. It can't happen. And you brain-dead, half-assed Republican listeners don't start telling me, well, communism was liberalism. No, it wasn't. It was totalitarianism. Never mind. You wouldn't know the difference. Go back to sleep. It doesn't occur under liberals, is what I'm getting at. So all of this resistance, and it is spreading It's occurring in Chile, too. Did you know that? Nobody pays attention to South America. We just don't pay, unless it's Hugo Chavez and somebody in the United States political scheme wants to start beating up on Chavez. And, you know, well, he's in Cuba getting treatment for cancer and what have you. But it's happening in Chile, too. It's happening to a lesser degree in Central America. I shudder to think what's going to happen when this starts to occur in China, or India, for that matter. India, it's going to take the form of religious murder. The Hindus and the Muslims, the Hindus and the Sikhs, periodically erupt and decide to butcher each other. Literally butcher. Like hack into pieces. Nothing like religious madness to really get people going. You know what I'm saying? So here we are. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Now, there's a solution to all this, of course. There really is a solution to this, and that is the utter and complete and total dismantling and or destruction of the economic slash political system that has brought us here. We can do it. I mean, we went from monarchical form of government into a more representative form of government. We made the transition. Yeah, there was a lot of bloodshed. Yeah, it was difficult. Even the shift from small shops and guilds and tradespeople to this overarching capitalism. Even that, it took a little time. It was bloody. It was horrifying. But this transition occurred, so now it's time for another transition. I mean, isn't that clear? Well, I guess it is clear to some people. And not clear to very many, I guess. I don't know. All right, stick around. When we come back after the break, we're going to talk for a while with Annie Nelson. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour on the Malloy program. This hour is sponsored by the Brothers Cogdill, John and Stanley. And John is in Maryland, Stanley is in Seattle. They are brothers. Their message: thank you for educating people about the harm Republicans and their financial masters have done to America over the past 30 years. Americans must stop voting against their own best interests. And the entire program tonight, as it has been for the past week and a half, is underwritten by Farm Aid and BioWilly, a biodiesel company that is diluting the impact of greenhouse gases on the environment. Let me just tell you now, just briefly, about biodiesel. It is the Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance, from their mission statement. This organization was founded in December 2006 by biodiesel pioneer Kelly King, activist Annie Nelson, and filmmaker Daryl Hannah. Since then, the Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance. The SBA has grown to include family farmers, farm organizations such as Farm Aid, the Institute for Agriculture, Trade, and Policy, members of the 25 by 25 coalition, environmental organizations like the EPA, renewable energy experts, the list goes on and on, and NGOs, and university programs across the country. The Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance addresses issues concerning the sustainability of the U.S. biodiesel industry through three initiatives. Primary mission of the SBA is the completion of an independent sustainability certification system for U.S. biodiesel feedstock production, distribution, and end-use fuel. Secondly, SBA programs also focus on educating the public about these issues. And third, by working with biodiesel consumers in the biodiesel industry and promoting the value of sustainable community-based systems, the SBA is bringing people together to build a sustainable energy future that benefits all sectors of society. And a partridge in a pear tree. Joining us now is Annie Nelson. She joins us from Los Angeles. That's a mouthful, Annie.
Well, yeah, but you actually just said it all, so I can hang up now.
No. Don't leave.
Well, thanks for doing it.
We have. I've got a million questions here. I really do. And the first one that came to mind, back when I started to realize about 10 days ago, because I have to tell you, I was totally unaware of BioWilly and biodiesel and the SVA completely. I'm embarrassed to say that, but it's the truth. But the first thought that came to mind when I started reading online about what the SVA is trying to do, the first question, how do you fight the oil companies? How do you find a niche? I mean, these people, and I mean literally, would try to smother, kill any competition that they thought seriously was going to affect their enormous polluting profits.
Yeah, and, you know, there's arguments to say that, in fact, they have. But where do you start? I mean, that you have to start somewhere, and you know, we've been fighting for a long time. I've been involved in biodiesel since 2003. We just started this organization when we saw how ridiculous and how co-opted it had started to become.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, there's the equivalent of industrial ag in biodiesel. And it, you know, we promote the idea that renewable isn't necessarily sustainable. And so with that in mind, we formed the SBA to say, look, you know, the most important thing is that we leave the petrol paradigm and go into one that actually supports our country and our economy and, in fact, our health. It's the planet's health, but it you know, mm-hmm. I mean, we're just
right.
directly involved with us. But we our protocol that we did come up with, we finished our mission, we did come up with that protocol, and it's been adopted by the Roundtable on Sustainable Biofuels and to be used, and it's being used globally now. So it is working. We're not, I mean, we are on the radar of petrols. You know, they don't like us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're asking for my main push in the last 2 years has been to push the idea of discontinuing subsidies to a company who's, you know, basically on the books with record-breaking profits
sure.
for 30 years.
Sure.
I mean, why are they getting subsidies and we get nothing? You know, the subsidies to quote renewables usually get is same as the subsidies to farmers. It usually gets co-opted by those with lobbyists, and it never makes it to people who are actually doing something sustainable. And it's even that amount of money is a pittance compared to the, what, I think with all the numbers thrown, it's about $40 billion a year to oil subsidies. You know, we'll take 10%.
Sure.
We have nothing. I mean, comparatively, we have nothing.
Do you personally and the SBA collectively, do you see this, biodiesel idea as being one that is capable of providing all energy needs, let's just start with the U.S., all energy needs here? The reason I ask that, with the constant increase in energy needed to run everything from high-speed computers to iPhones to all this the electronic stuff that's going on. It's just staggering how much energy is devoured or converted, since it can't be devoured, converted into the use of these devices. Do you see biodiesel as being able to sustain that kind of demand?
No, it's a piece of the puzzle. To be honest, the things that can sustain those stationary type energy needs are free. You know, they're whether you believe in God or not. And trust me, I was on your rant earlier. I am your equivalent on Facebook. People probably hate my guts, but I am your equivalent on Facebook.
Thank you.
And really, everything that you were speaking about is related to oil or the military industrial complex, which in fact we were squarely warned about, but no. And what it requires is mass transportation. You can go 400 miles on a gallon of biodiesel on a train. Stationary energy is passive energy. Is solar and wind and geo and buildings should all be those things. And if all buildings had those things, we wouldn't need anything. We wouldn't need coal, and what the hell is clean coal anyway? Ask your local miner, I guess. But, we wouldn't need it. It's not one magic bullet. But I will say that for transportation, and that biodiesel is right now the only viable, sustainable answer we do have. Mm-hmm. Hydrogen is really driving around in a bomb, and it's not been advanced. It sounds like a money scam to me.
Mm-hmm.
And there are even money scams in this, which is why we started doing this. Sustainable biodiesel is different from renewable biodiesel. Renewable biodiesel can mean stuff like palm oil from Indonesia that then you import, or you grow food. Our thing is food first.
Right.
Sorry. Food first means that you use the food, you take the oil, the waste grease. You can even use coffee grounds, and you know what the amount, it doesn't give you that much of a yield, but to be honest, there's so many coffee junkies in the world. In any case, you can use so many things that are post food.
Mm-hmm.
And like, for instance, biodiesel from soy, where you grow soy, you dump that on the earth, which is really, really a tough thing to grow and hard on the soil.
Mm-hmm.
If you do biodiesel from soy, it's really only decreasing like 57% of greenhouse gases. It does. Mm-hmm. Biodiesel from soy decreases 57% of greenhouse gases. But if you use biodiesel from like waste grease, it decreases 86% of greenhouse gases. So why wouldn't you do food first? And then you eliminate the argument about, it's going to displace food and make food prices go up.
Right. Hey, Annie, can you hold on a second? You can stick around a little bit, right?
Yes.
Okay, let me put you on hold. We're going to do some commercials here. We'll be right back. We're talking with Annie Nelson about Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance and just everything we can get out tonight about what that's about. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Past the hour. We're talking with Annie Nelson, one of the people who put together the Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance 8 years ago, right? I think
we started this in 2006. We got into biodiesel in 2003.
Right. Okay. So you've been involved in it for about 8 years, and this organization was put together about 5 years ago. In looking over the information, virgin oil feedstock, rapeseed, that's canola, right?
It's canola, yes.
Canola oil, soybean oils are most commonly used. There's so much information here. Hemp, when Willie was on the other night, I mentioned hemp. There was a time in this country when hemp was, I think it was grown with, if not government subsidies, it was certainly grown with government blessings because it was so necessary, in the production of everything from rope to be used in sailing ships that were going after, the oil that was used before we started punching holes in the ground, and that was whale oil until we almost wiped that species off the face of the earth. But trying to convince people that hemp is not something you smoke and get high, but something that can be used for so much, including this, I would assume, right?
Right, and in fact, it's got a high oil seed. A yield to their oil seed, and I couldn't believe you guys didn't get off more on a tangent the other night. I was listening, but yeah, it actually, the hemp plant it blocks a hallucinogenic effect. That's mm-hmm. why our founding fathers they coordinate with their farmer neighbors where they would plant all their hemp on one side together, and they would plant their marijuana that they use for medicine on the other side. Mm-hmm. So that they wouldn't mix, so that it wouldn't degrade the marijuana for mm-hmm. their medicine. I mean, it didn't really matter for the hemp, but it did for the medicine, and they didn't want to degrade it. So there's a lot to be said for that, too. But there are a couple states that are kind of close. I mean, it's absolutely stupid that we can bring the seed in. We can bring the clothes in. We can bring everything. It's grown in Canada. We can do all that, but we can't do it in the United States, and it's again because our democracy is owned by corporations. Mm-hmm. We're an oligarchy.
Let me ask you something, Annie, that is directly, I guess, or certainly indirectly related to this. How optimistic are you about the direction, not the direction that we're heading, but the direction we need to be heading in this country that would include sustainable biodiesel fuel, among other things, but would also include the necessity all of a sudden for a little bit of sanity in this country? How optimistic are you? I have a hell of a time trying to keep in my own personal life a good attitude. I come on this program every night, as I guess you're aware, and just raise pure hell. But you know, I've got a 7-year-old. I've got to have some kind of optimism. How do you feel about that?
Well, I am the same way. I actually have poured myself into this. I started because I needed a place for my children and grandchildren to live, and a place where there was some semblance of sanity. And in fact, the question you just asked is, everybody on my Facebook can tell you the answer to that, is that we need to repeal Citizens United. We need to go back to Glass-Steagall. I honestly think mm-hmm. that nothing will change. I don't care if we elected Mother Teresa. Mm-hmm. Nothing's going to change. Nobody will be able to govern effectively until the money is out of politics and until, in fact, we go to a publicly financed campaign. And that's going to be the hard part, because I'm not sure we can do that without a revolution. I think they're so firmly ensconced. And I don't know that it's not I don't know that it has to necessarily be to be a violent type revolution. I mean, Gandhi had it right. If we all just sit down, mm-hmm. we stop paying the piper. And, mm-hmm. I would say I'm not advocating it because I don't want to get in trouble. I've already pissed off the petroleum industry. So yeah, I say I'm advocating it.
Right, right. No, I'll take care of that part of it. And you take care of, the rational part. I'll do the irrational part because I so completely agree. We've reached a point where all of these good ideas, like what you're involved in, biodiesel, BioWilly, Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance, all of these ideas, and there's so many other ones that are pro-earth, they're pro-people, they're pro-life, they're pro-sustainability, they are, I don't know, sometimes when I think...
But they're all connected.
And they're all connected, and they all have as the ultimate goal to do things right. And for the people who do want to rely on the Bible or religion, when, you know, when it was said in Genesis that there is dominion over the earth, I don't think that the reference was to get out here and destroy everything. Annie, can you hold on again?
Sure.
All right, let me put you on hold one more time here. We're talking with Annie Nelson about, well, biodiesel and BioWilly and throwing the bastards out of office, I guess, or something. I don't know, but stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Come on back, Jesus. Come on back, Jesus. Come on back, Jesus.
This hour is sponsored by the, where the hell is it, Gally? Oh, here it is. The Cogdill Brothers, John and Stanley, West Coast and East Coast. They have sponsored the whole program tonight. They have a message. Thank you for educating people about the harm Republicans and the financial masters have done to America over the past 30 years. Americans must stop voting against your own best interests. And the entire program for the past week and a half and through the end of this week is underwritten by Farm Aid, BioWilly, and BioDiesel. And that's who we're talking right now. We're talking to Annie Nelson, who is one of the founders of the Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance. This is a part, Annie, with, you know, when I'm talking to somebody who, whether it's in politics or, environmental issues or sustainable energy or whatever it is, everything sounds good. And then I get to this point. How do you educate people to do whatever people do any longer? I sometimes get real frustrated because it seems like the activism that was around in the 70s and into the 80s at the beginning of, you know, what Tom Wolfe came up with, the Me Decade. When the Me Decade started, everything just seemed to go to hell in a handbasket. So how do you educate people about not just the desirability of getting off of these petroleum-based products, but the absolute necessity of getting off? How do you do it?
It's a conundrum. I mean, the problem is that, well, the benefit is that we have built-in voices. I mean, our honorary board is Will, my husband. It's Jack Johnson. It's, you know, so many other, like, artists. It's Pat Simmons from the Doobie Brothers, who, by the way, wrote that song that you played earlier about... Jesus is just all right with me.
Oh yeah, we had you know, Doobies came out with a new CD here about, I don't know, what
yeah,
was it, Kat,
really
about six
great.
Months. Yeah, and
well, Pat's on our board of directors, and he's also his their family,
uh-huh.
And his our boys went to school together, and we actually had an online high school we did, and they got Howard Zinn instead of, you know, the Texas school books, but you know,
that's good.
Yeah, they're both activists, but
right.
They came up. The boys came up with a video that they were going to do with Pat. The Pat actually and the boys did it with that song.
Huh.
That was sort of like a backstage thing where Jesus is at a Doobie's concert,
right,
and
right.
And he's kind of backstage, and Pat comes off after singing that song, and he's signing autographs, and Jesus is tapping on his shoulder and tapping on his shoulder, and he turns around, and he's like, "Dude, you know, I create the world. I mean, my dad creates the world. I do all this. I heal the sick. I heal the lame, and I'm just all right with you." You know, it's kind of like the way things are right now.
Right.
You know, whatever happened to holding up the least amongst us,
right.
And have that reflect on us and become our values. That's the problem. And the problem is that, you know, the benefit is we have voices that help us get the word out.
Mm-hmm.
And also the higher that the oil prices go, the more people look for alternatives. So, I mean, oil, gasoline prices, not even close to what they actually should be. Because
mm-hmm.
what does it cost to go get it? I mean, you know, what's your child's life worth?
Right. Right.
I guess you put it in if you put it in that kind of perspective, and then the travel, and then the pulling it out of the ground, and then if you look at the Rim of Fire, a lot of those earthquakes around where they do drilling and slant drilling, and you know, all of that stuff, and that's not even taking into consideration the effect of carbon on all of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it was always unsustainable, but it got us through a certain point. But we don't need it anymore. We just, you know, we're junkies.
You know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say it doesn't benefit anybody except for those few 1% in that oil industry that are making boatloads of money off of us.
You know, it's a shame to me. I guess whatever it takes to wake people up, but it's a shame to me that it takes price to wake people up as opposed to trying to keep what Carl Sagan referred to as this little blue dot able to support life. I, you know, when I think of the damage done by the Murdoch Corporation, where it concerns this constant drumbeat against the idea of global climate change and the direct causes, I mean, how much science do these people need? You know,
well, they don't believe in science.
Well, that's
so it doesn't really matter. And
right.
The other problem with that is that, you know, their biggest damage is Orwellian. It's been disinformation. So Murdoch, I think I wouldn't want his karma for anything in the world.
No.
And I don't care what you believe in, I wouldn't want that.
Right. Well,
and
you don't even have to go to karma. You just go to Newton's laws of,
right.
For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
Yeah. It's simple physics. He's got a lot coming to him. And you know, that disinformation alone is the hardest thing to balance and the hardest thing to mm-hmm. to educate, because it's not, they don't think they're uneducated. They think they're
right.
very well educated. They've just been educated they've been educated to ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, stupidity, you know, ignorance is curable, but it's really hard to argue with. It's like this, you know, it's kind of a psychopathic, what do you call that, circle argument when you get into it
mm-hmm.
with them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know that they actually are arguing against their own best interests constantly.
Well, that's
and you know, it's like, please, so may I have another.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that is so frustrating sometimes, is that if it takes the price of gasoline per gallon to wake people up to alternative fuels, so be it. But I wish that we were, as a species, we were able to see the bigger picture. We were able to see, look, we're destroying everything. We're just destroying everything with this constant release of pollutants and CO2 into the atmosphere. And if there's any way out of this, shouldn't we be doing it? Well, obviously there are ways out of it. You know, one of the most horrifying things to me was after Ronald Reagan took office, one of the first things he did in the White House was remove the solar panels that had been put there by
right.
Jimmy Carter 34 years ago. Stop and think. Supposing Reagan just would have said, you know, this is a good idea, and expanded them. Where in the hell would we be now, 35 years later?
Right.
Where would we be?
And do you know how far behind we are the rest of the world right now? I mean, most of the world, more than 50% of the cars in the rest of the world are diesels, and there is some form of biodiesel in them. It's mandated.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon's ahead of the whole country in that respect, but and some states are moving that way. Some cities are moving that way, and then it becomes a state thing. But you know, how sad is it that your example right there, nothing has changed. I mean, there's no interest at all in this country. The whole main interest is to get rid of Obama. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hate defending Obama. He's a Chicago school guy. I'm worried about the Supreme Court, but that's, you know, I mean, I feel bad that I'm put in positions of defending sometimes him when they say that it's Obama. He's done twice as much as it's that disinformation. It's Fox News. They're still doing it. It's all of Murdoch's papers that were taken over by somebody else, but they're still doing it. So how do you deal with that when, you know, what did Noam Chomsky call them? The bewildered herd. Mm. You know, it's like they're scattered.
Mm-hmm.
Half of them are running for the cliff and they don't even know it. And you can't get their attention to say, come over here. Because there's so much money, it's like the money is being thrown. That's their carrot. It's being thrown in front of them, but they're not getting any of it, and they just don't get it.
You need to have your own radio program.
Yeah.
No, you really do.
Are you kidding? I'm terrified right now. I couldn't decide whether I was more nervous about talking on the radio or still amped from your rant when I got on.
No. You've got the bases covered, and you make a very cogent argument about this stuff, especially the biodiesel, the renewable energy sources, the sustainable energy sources, I should say. And it's just a damn shame that that the education process of the American public is such an enormous curve in trying to just move us as a population off of dead stop, just trying to get a little movement to wake people up. All right, listen, I want to ask you if you can hold on one more time.
Okay.
We've got a relatively short break here, and then we'll come back and wrap this up, okay?
Great.
All right, Annie, hold on just for another moment. Stick around. We're talking with Annie Nelson about the Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance. And if you go to farmaid.org, I'm sure there'll be a link there for this. If we will get a direct link for you. Do we have one up on our website, Kathy? We do? On biodiesel? Okay, go to mikemalloy.com and you'll find it. All right? Stick around. We'll be right back. Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by John and Stanley Cogdell, brothers who live on the two coasts. Their message, thanks for your educating people about the harm Republicans and the financial masters have done to America over the past 30 years. Americans must stop voting against their own best interests. Thank you, John. Thank you, Stanley. And, of course, the program this week and last week underwritten by the Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance and Farm Aid 2011, which is coming up this Saturday. You know, Annie, that song that we use, the bumper back music, Roger Waters, I've Become Comfortably Numb. You know, even though that was written in a different context, it certainly didn't, it wasn't a political statement at all. But it seems like people in this country have become uncomfortably numb, and trying to motivate people is the job that it seems like so many righteous NGOs like the SBA, the use of solar energy, the use of geothermal energy, the use of wind energy, anything to turn around what's happening is just so impossible to get going unless and until, I guess, there's some kind of a cataclysmic event of some sort. It may be political.
Stock doctrine.
Yeah.
Maybe the stock doctrine could work in our on our behalf instead of
working against
where it creates an opportunity to steal. But you know what? I think people are actually numb. I mean, if you look at the amount of antidepressants and that goes into the water and that goes in all this, I think people really are numb.
I think there's probably a lot of truth to that. Jeez.
I think, you know, we were talking before. You remember it's the economy, stupid?
Right, during the Clinton campaign, right.
Yeah, I think at this point, and maybe I'll have my son sign this T-shirt, but it's our existence, stupid.
Yeah.
It's down to that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I have no idea what's going to happen, but maybe I should say, you know, just in case the oil industry offs me, in lieu of flowers, please make a donation to the SBA.
Oh, God.
I know, and you know, well, you know, really, you can be disappeared. I can have an accident in my biodiesel.
Oh, sure.
But, you know, they disappeared Rudolph Diesel. The diesel engine was designed to run on peanut oil.
Now, wait a minute. I'm not familiar with this story. Rudolph Diesel, the inventor of...
He disappeared over the Atlantic.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
And when was this? In the 1900s?
Oh, I don't actually know I'm not good with all the dates and mm-hmm. stuff. I'm terrible with dates. But I do know that not long after he did, he disappeared. You know, there was such a conspiracy. California, Los Angeles, and what is it, Cleveland, Ohio, used to have some of the best mass transit in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that conspiracy that took those trains in Los Angeles, which now is completely dependent on automobiles.
Right.
And not only took up off the train, they actually crushed the train and pulled the tracks up. So that, you know, it couldn't be, you know, people couldn't go, wait a minute, when prices started going up. They couldn't do that. Or all the people that realized, hey, wait, we can't afford a car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the way it is. In California, I mean, now we have a few more trains and, you know, we try supporting them and all of that, but there are so many places that it just doesn't exist. It's some of the worst commuter problems in the world are in the United States.
Well, here in Atlanta, we're certainly a close second. We are not quite the megalopolis that the L.A. Basin is, but there are close to 5.5 million people here now, and the pollution and the atmosphere is just so nasty. It's very much like LA in the bad old days. I was just looking for people who want to check out Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance. We've got a 5-minute and 30-second video on our homepage, MikeMalloy.com. Just scroll down; it's right there in the middle, and just click on it. It runs 5 minutes 30 seconds, and you'll have a pretty good idea of what the SBA is about.
Is that from the Revolution Green film?
It's the one about Oregon.
Oh yeah, that's really great. Oregon, really, they had a great mayor, and that it really just takes somebody to just say, I don't care what you want, I'm doing this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because I have children, and, you know, BioWilly, by the way, is biodiesel, but BioWilly, when somebody buys BioWilly and they can ask for it, you know, wherever somebody sells diesel, mm-hmm. but the BioWilly name, that brand, ensures that it meets those sustainable standards.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the value of it. And it you know, it's usually local collected waste grease.
And where, you know, this is a question somebody asked me the other day, you know, when I said that we had gotten involved with BioWilly and
where they get it.
Yeah, where do you, like here in the South, here in Georgia, where would people
right
get it?
Right now, you can't get it in Georgia yet. We're working on that. But we do, like all truckers have to have an additive that goes into their mm-hmm. fuel, and we're just coming online shortly with our BioWilly additive. But that, again, it's local, it's sustainable, and pretty much everything in it is. But it's you know, it's not out there completely yet.
Mm-hmm.
But if they go to if you go to our website for the SBA, and it's fuelresponsibly.org.
Okay.
And if you go to biodiesel.com, there'll be a link there too.
Okay.
That's how long our partners have been in biodiesel. They have biodiesel.com.
Annie, we're just flat out of time here. I have to tell you, it's been very enlightening talking with you. And, you know, I don't
Thanks for having us.
Well, I don't do guests, but having you on and having Willie the other night and...
and you played my son's lick the other day on the bumper music. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
And tell Kathy, thank you.
I will. And please...
And join the SBA.
Forward any links you have, and we'll post them at our website, all right?
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you so much.
All right. Take care, Annie.
I'll see you later.
We'll be back after the break. Stick around, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy. This hour also is sponsored by the brothers, John and Stanley Cogdell. Thanks, guys, again. The message this hour, thank you for educating people about the harm Republicans and their financial masters have done to America over the past 30 years. Keep urging people to stop voting against their own best interests. Indeed. Thanks to the Cogdell brothers for sponsoring the entire program tonight. And the program, of course, is underwritten by Farm Aid 2011. As you heard earlier, well, last night, from Jennifer Fahey, who is the communications director of the concert, Farm Aid 2011, and as you heard tonight from Annie Nelson about BioWillie and BioDiesel, a good group of people who are doing what they can to try to turn the country around. Speaking of turning the country around, I have not welcomed Keith Oberman onto the Malloy Scream Machine. And now we have another. So welcome, Keith. Good to hear you go a little bit out of the parameters of being intense, but not really unloading until you got with Current TV. Good for you. And now Dylan Radigan. Frankly, I'm sick of these bland commentators who refuse to inject emotion to what they're talking about and where it desperately needs emotion. So Dylan Radigan yesterday, this was before the polls closed in the debacle in Wisconsin, was talking with two female, one male political commentators. And I want you to hear this. This runs 5 minutes. I just want you to hear Dylan Radigan finally exploding. Of course, he doesn't use the kind of not profane, but curse-filled language I use. But I want you to hear him, and I want to say to Dylan Radigan, welcome aboard, pal.
We owe $70 trillion.
Yeah, I understand that, but
it goes due to walk out a $4 trillion solution, which is basically just a way for the Democrats to avoid dealing with this until 2017. I'm not here to talk about plans to deal with this till 2017. I'm saying we've got a real problem, and I'm tired of Republicans and Democrats who either want Republicans who want to burn the place to the ground, and Democrats, with all due respect, who want to offer a plan that gets it through the their end of their second term of their presidency, and then screws me and my kids when it's over. And until we do that, we have to deal with the extraction that is at foot. It is the reason the financial markets are behaving the way they're behaving. That is a mathematical fact. This is not some opinion. This is a mathematical fact. Tens of trillions of dollars are being extracted from the United States of America. Democrats aren't doing it. Republicans are not doing it. An entire integrated system, financial system, trading system, taxing system that was created by both parties over a period of two decades is at work on our entire country right now. And we're sitting here arguing about whether we should do the $4 trillion plan that kicks the can down the road for the president for 2017 or burn the place to the ground, both of which are reckless, irresponsible, and stupid. And the fact of the matter is, until we actually, and I'm sorry to lose my temper, but I tell you what, I've been coming on TV for 3 years doing this. And the fact of the matter is that there's a refusal on both the Democratic and the Republican side of the aisle to acknowledge the mathematical problem, which is that the United States of America is being extracted. It's being extracted through banking, it's being extracted through trade, and it's being extracted through taxation. And there's not a single politician that has stepped forward, Susan, to deal with this.
Yeah, but there's only one right now. The leader of the free world, whether you like it or not, the president of the United States is arguably one of the most powerful individuals we have out there.
But, Susan, what you're saying is exactly the point that Dylan is making. It's not about one guy. It's about all of them coming together.
No, I actually disagree. I think Dylan's saying it is about one guy.
It is about one guy.
What would you like him to do? Tell me what you want him to do.
I would like him to go to the people of the United States of America and say, people of the United States of America, your Congress is bought. Your Congress is incapable of making legislation on health care, banking, trade, or taxes, because if they do it, they will lose their political funding and they won't do it. But I'm the President of the United States, and I will have a country that is run by a bought Congress. So I'm not going to work with a bought Congress and try to be Mr. Big Guy. I'm working with the bought Congress. I'm going to abandon the bought Congress like Teddy Roosevelt did, and I'm going to go to the people of the United States and I'm going to say, you've got a bought Congress. And until we get rid of the bought Congress, which is Jimmy Williams' constant point, which is get the money out of politics, and until a president says that's the problem and says he's going to fix it, there is no policy that I can possibly see, no matter how brilliant your idea may be, or your idea, or my idea, or her idea, or your idea at home, is. That idea will not happen as long as there is the capacity to basically fire a politician who disagrees with me by taking funding away from him. Is that a fair assessment?
Money and politics is the root of all political evil. It is corruption at its worst. And until we step up and kick that out of the park, it's going to be the same system all
and
the
time. And only the president could do that. We're going
to Congress has to do it, too. The Congress has to do it, too.
But I'll tell you what. How bad does it have to get? How much money has to be extracted?
Asking,
how many things have to be hurt?
The brass tax. Okay, physically, what do you do?
You go and give a speech.
Right now.
Right now.
And then what happens tomorrow?
Tomorrow what happens is you begin the process of actually investing in solving the problem. So
how?
I come out and I say, how? I create an infrastructure bank with 2% blending immediately. There's that. Once I explain to people the problem, once I explain to you you have cancer, once you understand how screwed up your trade, tax, and banking policies are, believe me, you will have no issue when I incorporate an infrastructure bank that I fund with repatriated offshore money that I bring in and then use to create 2% direct lending to every business in America. Because when you realize that the banking system is fully corrupt and defrauding us, and I come out and say that, which is what I want my president to do, that at that exact moment I say, you know what, we got a screwed up situation here, people. You all know it, and now what? I'm going to admit it. And as a result, not only have I admitted it, but we're going to begin the process of solving it like grown-ups. They did it in World War II. They did it after the Civil War. They did it in Latin America with the Brady Bonds. We are not seeing it happen now. The panel stays a little more emotional than I anticipated getting at work this afternoon, but what am I going to do?
A little more emotional than I intended to be. Well, not to get too patronizing here, God forbid, but once again, I want to welcome Dylan Radigan and the two female experts who are there with him, one Republican, one Democrat. I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank on their names. And Jimmy Williams, the MSNBC contributor who was there. Jimmy Williams was quiet during this rant. The two women were doing their best to express their own frustration. And I think if we had more of this, if we had commentators who would be moved by the truth, Barack Obama is not going to do a goddamn thing. He's not going to do anything. Do you not understand that, people? I mean, do you not understand? Look what happened in Wisconsin yesterday. Like I mentioned last hour, or the beginning of the program tonight. Where in the hell was Obama? Where was Obama? Not a peep. Not a word. Nothing. Nothing. He deserves to have his ass kicked politically in the next election. He does. The problem is that the person who will politically kick his ass will probably be a real, true, deep fascist. Because nobody on the left is willing to challenge this crap. Nobody. So, Dylan Radigan, good on you, pal. And Keith Olbermann, good on you, too. Now, let's see if maybe a few more commentators from the left will stop this ridiculous-ass equivalence nonsense. This stuff about, well, you know, even though Dylan Radigan did put the blame where it belongs on both parties, they're both ineffective. The ones that are destroying the whole goddamn country are these cockroaches on the right. The problem is these cowards on the left are doing nothing, nothing, nothing. Past the hour. A couple of stories that aren't getting a whole lot of attention, getting some attention in this country. The massive demonstrations going on in Israel and the demonstration/riots going on in England. We are in a very volatile period right now in so many countries. You don't need me to tell you that. And in my opinion, for the most part, it's all brought about by the same neo-fascist right-wing drift that people are tired of. Steve the banker sent this to me the other day. He said the biggest story that you've not heard, because the story's been blacked out from the American public. During the past 2 weeks, up to 300,000 Jews and Arabs in all segments of Israel's population have been protesting together for fair housing, for peace, for a new Israel. They are together marching by the hundreds of thousands. In a country of less than 7 million, 300,000 marching in cities all over Israel. This is a big story. And the big lie is that scum like Senator Lieberman is passing threatening war messages to keep the sides apart because of the impending UN vote for Palestinian statehood in September. But if you want more information about this, go to haaretz.com and check it out. Because, you know, whether we like either reality or not, the United States has deep ties and involvements with both the UK and Israel, probably more so in differing ways with those two countries than any other two countries on earth, with the possible exception of China. But China, of course, is the master of U.S. consumers. I'm talking about a different kind of relationship. But if you can think of a deeper relationship that the United States has other than the relationship with Britain and Israel, tell me, what do you think it is? And both of these countries, both of them, for essentially the same reasons, now are on the brink. Now, they're being handled. The people in Israel, the demonstrations there are peaceful. focused. The demonstrations in Britain are riotous, unfocused, violent. But the underlying causes of both are basically the same. And once again, here the people in the United States sit. Slowly, slowly, I think this facade of, oh, well, we're all above this, in terms of media in this country, is starting to be chipped away, i.e. Dylan Radigan, i.e. Keith Olbermann, and a few other people, very few, who are getting to the point where they just can't sit there and talk about this nonsense as if it didn't affect them, it didn't affect the whole country, didn't affect a global society. We're in a transition period. It's coming as surely as you know. How that transition is handled is going to be determined by the people involved. It's not going to be determined by the leadership. The leadership of these various countries is causing this, because the leadership of how many countries on earth now has drifted rightward, way rightward, where the wealthy, the upper 1%, 2%, 3% in every single country is just sucking these countries dry, taking everything they can get their hands on. How much longer do you suppose this is going to go on before peaceful protest or civil disobedience degenerates into the kind of rioting and violence not seen since, oh, I don't know, pick a time. The 1790s in France, is that what we need? Is that what it's going to take? And in this country, not terribly unlike Likud in Israel, and the conservatives in the UK, in this country, we are run by right-wingers, most of whom are just goddamn insane. They're just out of their minds. And you take a look at the new crop of these right-wingers who want to take over from this miserable, leaderless government that we have now. And you shudder if you still have any ability to think, unlike the people in Wisconsin, for Christ's sake. So, when we come back after this break, I am going to share with you a little bit of an address, I should say, that Palestinian-Israeli author Odeh Bisharet offered to 300,000 protesters in Tel Aviv on Saturday. And I want you to hear it, because what he talks about, what Dylan Radigan was screaming about, what I talk about, what Olbermann talks about, what anybody with any goddamn sense at all is talking about, will be evident in what this man has to say. A Palestinian Israeli. So if you want to hear something, stick around. Before the hour, the situation in Israel, the protests there, mass protest movement, given the population of Israel, what is it, about 7 million, and 300,000 people in the streets. If we had an equivalent turnout here, it would be like, 13, 14 million people in the streets. If I got the numbers right, I don't know. It doesn't matter. But huge numbers of Americans. Let me share with you Palestinian-Israeli author Oda Bisharat in Tel Aviv this past Saturday. This is what he said. One summery day, a revolution began in Israel, the revolution of the young. In July, the sweet, contagious innocence defeats all the sophistication. One morning, a young man or a young woman got up, a young man or a young woman who took no account of the complexities of politics, who didn't care what the coalition would say or what the opposition would say, who were unmoved by opinion polls, who weren't captivated by popularity ratings, who didn't ask for the opinion of the tycoons padding the war chests of the parties at election time. On that morning, a young man or a young woman got up and said, "Enough, no more." And that no more is echoing across the country, from west to east and from the north to the south. Ladies and gentlemen, this is how revolution happens. It creeps up silently and then bursts forward like a flood. And this is how the glorious revolution of the young is happening. Long live the revolution of the young. Only a short while ago, gas stations were jammed with vehicles. The drivers competed head-to-head on getting one more liter of cheap gas before tomorrow's price hike. Only a short while ago, the lust of me ruled supreme at the crossroads. Elbows worked overtime, and selfishness was a desired product of the market. The revolution of the young had come to say, no more. Just minutes before the revolution, we were being convinced that we live in an economic paradise and that the economy survived the global crisis. Really? If the economy's so up, how come we're so down? Now it turns out the financial reporting was just like a school principal that allows only 5 out of 40 students to sit at the matriculation exams and then takes pride in having a 100% success ratio. Everything is glorious for the tycoon. And no one even visits the backyard of the state. A few years ago, Netanyahu, then finance minister, destroyed the welfare state and told us proudly the economy was as high as it gets. This is what they mean when they say the operation was successful, but the patient died. And so, in a sauna of warmth and humidity, the July miracle came to be, and the dead patient came to life. The dead patient, it turns out, is alive and kicking, and when he kicks, it hurts. At Tahrir Square, at their protest that astounded the world, just like here, the people were being convinced that there's no other way, either a corrupt dictatorship or religious fanaticism. And here, we were being told there's nothing to be done. A government rises and a government falls, but the tycoons keep laughing all the way to the bank. Only at the last possible minute did someone dare to ring the alarm bells. These were the young people who inspired hearts with the hope for change. The Arab population, well-versed in suffering and struggle, has much sympathy for what is going on here. Its heart was always captivated by the struggle against exploitation, wherever it took place, whether in Tel Aviv, or in Homs, in Tripoli, or Misrata. The state not only didn't build in the Arab community, quite the opposite, the state demolished. The Arabs are struggling for the recognition of the unrecognized villages, for a solution for the housing shortage of Arab citizens in Jaffa, against the demolition of houses and the expropriation of lands. It's time for this struggle to be the struggle of all those being exploited, Jews and Arabs. It's time for the warmth of this beautiful struggle to melt away the alienation between the two peoples when Arabs and Jews refuse to be enemies. An ancient Arab poet said, "And maybe you have a brother not born of your mother." And so in the struggle for social justice, for equality, for peace and fraternity, we are all united. Wonderful audience, the revolution is just beginning. When we, for the first time, break through the borders that lock us into tightly closed circles, when I look at this wonderful audience, when Arabs and Jews are together, when the secular and the religious are together, when the young people of the village and of the city are together, then this revolution has but one way, the way to victory. Wow. Palestinian-Israeli author Oda Bisharat, this past Saturday, talking to 300,000 people at a rally for social justice in Tel Aviv. Pretty incredible, huh? And that's occurring in a country that, in an area of the world where, for political reasons, the two peoples who populate, who both insist that that's their homeland, have been kept at each other's throats for 70 years, 60 years. Because that's what the politicians have demanded. That's what Israeli politicians, American politicians, Russian politicians, or I should say Soviet, that's what they have demanded. Keep these people at each other's throats. And now there's an effort being made to end that insanity for the Semitic people, which includes both Arab and Jew, in that part of the world, to understand their brotherhood. To understand, as the speaker said, is there a chance that you have a brother not of the same mother? Hello? But back here, here we are, huh? Here we are. Meanwhile, in the UK, the violence continues, and the Conservative Prime Minister David Cameron is threatening sustained police measures, including the possible use of water cannons, to stop the looting and arson that is ripping apart sections of Britain for the past 4 days and nights. So the response in Britain is force, just like the response in this country is always force. Take it from someone who's been arrested. Power will not sit down with you and listen. It won't. Why should it? What has power got to lose or gain, I should say, by sitting down and listening? Nothing. Power is power. So where are our poets? Where are our leaders? This would be a good time to say that this Saturday, a whole gang of our poets are going to get together in Kansas City, Kansas, and make at least one attempt in one small area of this madness in this country to try to resist, as they have done for 25 years now. Farm Aid. But beyond that, where are you? Where am I? What the hell are we doing? And I wonder how long it'll be before Dylan Radigan is asked to apologize. If you really want to get some information, and you should, honest to God, you should, you can go to any website of the British press. And if you want information, real information about what's going on in Israel-Palestine, of course, there's always Haaretz, but there's a website that you should check out, 972mag.com. Numeral 972mag, M-A-G, 972mag.com. There's all sorts of writers there, Jew, Arab, their videos, their blogs. There are live blogs. Go there. Check it out. 972mag.com. We've got to find something, some sort of inspiration. If it comes from the UK, if it comes from Israel, it doesn't make any difference. For God's sake, we have got to find some kind of inspiration. We have a president and two political parties who are absolutely determined to either let everything die or to kill it on the part of the right-wingers. Barack Obama and the Democrats do not care. I don't care what they say. Look at their action. Where was Barack Obama yesterday in Madison, Wisconsin? Where was he? Right. Where was? Oh, yeah, I'm all for the labor movement, he said during the campaign. If I see something bad going on like that, I'll find a pair of comfortable shoes and walk the picket line with you. Oh, really? Okay. Get there, yeah. Gonna rise up and take what's there. For the hour, this hour has been sponsored by brothers John and Stanley Cogdill. John from Maryland, Stanley from Seattle. And their message: thank you for educating people about the harm Republicans and their financial masters have done to America over the past 30 years. Keep urging people to stop voting against their own best interests. Will do, John and Stanley. To what end? You know, who knows, right? I mean, how do you convince people to stop voting against their own best interests when they are hung up on, well, we don't think homosexuals should have the right to marry, or some of this other nonsense? I mean, how do you, death panels. How do you do that? But we'll keep, as Bart Kopp says, we'll keep swinging the big hammer. And also the program all this week and all last week, underwritten by Farm Aid 2011. And BioWillie. And the BioDiesel Alliance. You heard all about it earlier this evening. Our deep thanks and gratitude to Willie Nelson and Annie Nelson and the whole group who are continuing to work for family farmers, family ranchers, sustainable food supply, sustainable environment. Dear God, why? I mean, after 25 years, sure, the concerts are great, but after 25 years, wouldn't you think that somebody in the power structure would say to these three or four or five mega corporations that control the production, the alteration, and the distribution of food in this country, would have said to these corporations, get out of town, get your asses gone, and close them down, huh? Wouldn't you think? Right, sure. But the poisoning continues. And, of course, we, being the good consumers that we are, continue to eat it, don't we? And we continue to get the bad news from our doctors about our cancers and our heart diseases and our hypertension and our strokes. Right? When do you think we'll ever wake up? Huh? This is not hard stuff, whether it's political or food supply or energy development, no matter what it is, it's not hard. You know the problem? We've given up. We have turned over to someone else the decisions about how we're going to live. We've turned it over to right-wing political fanatics and right-wing religious fanatics. When are we going to take it back? When do you want to do that? When do you want to take it back? You tell me. You tell me where to be. What time? What day? By God, I'll be there. Huh? Tell me. Go ahead. Just tell me where we should be. In Israel, Haaretz columnist Gideon Levy said that these protests going on there, Israel is waking up. Egypt woke up. The UK is starting to convulse. Gideon Levy said these massive protests addressing socioeconomic issues have never been seen before. Not in Israel. Oh, good heavens, no. But the young people there have had enough. The young people in Britain have had enough. When are the young people in this country going to realize what is happening to them, what their future consists of in this country? When's that going to happen? When are the middle-aged people going to say, enough, goddammit, we have been asleep for enough years, it's time. And when are the older people in this country going to reconnect to what you all did back in the 60s and say, all right, it's time again. I don't give a goddamn how old you are. I got busted. I'm in my 60s. Where are you? Where are you? Stop hiding in your houses. Stop hiding in your apartment. Stop pretending like this doesn't affect you. Where are you going to be this October? Are you going to have your ass in Washington, D.C.? Or are you going to sit on your ass on a couch somewhere and say, oh, well, there's nothing I can do? Ooh. Okay. I'm getting a little too carried away here today. I don't know. You know. Taxes and the breakup of cartels were some of the issues, the cartels, the big corporations that run everything in Israel. Those are some of the issues that the Israeli, Palestinians, or the Arabs and Jews are struggling with. That's what they're demonstrating against. And it became obvious that the platform of demands expanded over the past couple of days to include social, the social disparity that's going on in that country. And don't forget, Israel started out as a purely socialistic, almost communist society. Protesters started calling on the government to decrease the cost of living in general. They supported last month's protests in the education and health care sector, demanding improvements and expansion. Doctors had gone on strike over working conditions and deteriorating medical services. That's in Israel. What's going on here? When is the fury and the rage in Britain going to focus? Focus away from the destruction and the burning and the rioting that's going on now and focus into deliberate social action. Resistance. When's it going to happen? When are we going to wake up in this country? What's it going to take, folks? Huh? What's it going to take? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.